Today on Annenberg Radio News.
We will be on par with other communities in Los Angeles where our folks can quickly and safely get where they need to go.
After months of discussion, light rail is coming to Crenshaw, but will it do any good? Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, November 10th, 2009. I'm Pete Griffin. An ongoing legal battle between the L.A. city attorney and the city controller will continue for at least another week. Richie Duchamp reports that a judge has delayed the case once again.
This legal battle goes back about a year when the former city attorney filed a complaint against the former city controller. Then-city controller Laura Chick wanted to audit a program in then-city attorney Rocky Delgadillo's office. Delgadillo said under the city charter, the controller does not have the right to audit programs run by elected officials. Chick disagreed and hired her own lawyer to fight the case. A judge tentatively ruled in favor of Delgadillo's argument. Fast forward to the present, and we have a new city controller, Wendy Gruhl, and a new city attorney, Carmen Trutanich. Now here's where things get really confusing. The city attorney is usually the one that represents the city controller. But what happens when the attorney is the one battling the controller in court? Because of that sticky situation, the city council is now considering whether or not to pay for Gruhl to have her own independent lawyer. Gruhl says she's just concerned with doing her job.
My goal, again, is to limit the city's liability and dismiss this lawsuit to be able to allow the city controller to audit programs and to ensure for the public that their dollars are being spent efficiently and wisely. That's my job.
The city attorney's office asked the judge to make his earlier tentative ruling final. Assistant City Attorney Valerie Flores.
The tentative ruling found that the charter did not authorize the controller to compel a performance audit over the objection of another elected official, and the city council would like the judge to formalize and enter that tentative ruling as a final judgment.
Gruhl says it's a conflict of interest for the city council and the city attorney to control who represents her, when a victory for Gruhl could have negative effects for council members and the city attorney. Superior Court Judge Mark Mooney agrees. He wants to wait and see what the city council does next week. He postponed the case until November 20th. Richie Duchamp, Annenberg Radio News.
Today, the Board of Supervisors said that the county needs to improve its efforts to give out the swine flu vaccine. Supervisor Mark Ridley-Tomlin said that one cause is low turnout in the black community. Still, vaccine demand has exceeded supply in L.A. County. Adding to the problem, health officials said that the East San Fernando Valley doesn't have enough clinics to administer the vaccine. Mayor Villaraigosa announced today that L.A. is spending $10 million to train Angelenos for new jobs. The money will go to selected employment centers throughout the city. Ariel Edwards-Levy has the story.
This is the sound of green. Green jobs for formerly unemployed Angelenos. They're working on turning a former Glassell Park bakery into an environmentally friendly community college. With Los Angeles suffering from a 14% unemployment rate, jobs like these are the future, says Greg Irish, the mayor's chief advisor on workforce development.
This building is a green building that doesn't use a lot of energy. We're going to respect our natural resources and how we consume them, and it'll be an entirely different economy that's built around that.
That's why the mayor announced today that the city is spending millions of dollars to retrain workers for a new economy. Most of the money is from the federal stimulus, with some additional city funds, says Charlie Wu of the LA Workforce Investment Board.
Our purpose of this money, $10.3 million, is to target the growth industries, the industries that are going to survive the recession and grow and create more jobs when the economy comes back.
Growth industries are fields like green technology, healthcare, and hospitality that are continuing to hire workers. Irish says they're focusing on careers that often require extra training, but that pay a living wage.
We're focusing on industries that are likely to grow and that are going to create living wage jobs. We're not going after the McDonald's jobs, etc.
The money is expected to provide several thousand Angelenos with vocational training. Ariel Edwards-Levy, Annenberg Radio News.
The federal stimulus plan gave the Cal State University system $760 million. But that money is already gone, and school administrators are still struggling to balance the budget. Timothy Beckworth has a report on the latest wave of cutbacks.
Today, California State University Chancellor Charles Reed announced steep enrollment reductions as CSU copes with budget cuts. While applications have surged by more than 50%, 40,000 fewer students will be accepted during this school year and the next.
Denying student access to the California State University is just about the worst thing that I think I can do.
Chancellor Reed acknowledged that the cuts come during a difficult time, as the recession causes more students to apply to state schools.
But we cannot educate more students with $564 million less.
Chancellor Reed will ask the state to restore $900 million in funding for the 2010-2011 school year. But with the state facing a perennial budget deficit, proponents of higher education are getting used to lower expectations. Stephen Dixon is president of the Cal State Student Association.
Unfortunately, we have a very unreliable partner in Sacramento in higher education, and so I don't hold out a lot of hope that the legislators will do the right thing.
Even if funding could be restored, the enrollment reductions would continue until the 2011-2012 school year. Timothy Beckworth, Annenberg Radio News.
It was a little bit cloudy today with some fog rolling in this morning, and we can expect more of the same tonight with lows in the mid to upper 50s. Tomorrow is Veterans Day and it will be a partly cloudy one with highs in the upper 60s at the beaches and in the mid to upper 70s inland. The cloudy weather will continue into the evening with lows in the mid to upper 50s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, the battle over school reform got heated at the teachers' union headquarters today. A dance studio in South Los Angeles provides African Americans and other minority groups with a chance to learn cultural dance. Neela Jamie reports on the Lulu Washington Dance Theater.
This isn't the sound of an African ritual or a high school pep rally. These drums are used to teach pliés, pirouettes, and turnouts to dancers at the Lula Washington Dance Theater.
I've been in class with her before where she's played the drums during ballet. And it allows some students to focus more because they actually hear the accent of the music.
Dancer Stacy Strickland is talking about choreographer Lula Washington. Lula co-founded the dance theater in 1979 with her husband, Irwin.
So I wanted to create a place where African-American choreographers could create dance, could take class, and we could invite other cultural and minority groups in. So we wanted to provide a place where dance could happen in the inner city.
Lula grew up in Watts over on Imperial Highway. She says her family couldn't afford dance classes when she was younger. So after junior college, Lula took classes at UCLA, where she worked with well-known choreographers who helped her gain commercial success. She toured Vegas and appeared on television with Cher, but something didn't feel right. She wasn't spiritually inspired, but she was motivated by her own choreography.
My passion has been sharing my cultural voice through dance, sharing who I am as an African-American, as a human being, and what we call telling stories of voices that you don't usually hear through dance.
Lula says her dance is different because she moves with a cultural, historical, and Afrocentric point of view. It includes African, modern, jazz, blues, and street dance. At 59, Lula shares her traditional way of dancing with students at her Crenshaw studio. 9-year-old dancer Joy Floynoy says she likes the variety of techniques, but modern is her favorite.
Like, I can really put my heart and my soul into my movement, and it's slow, and it just, something about it just makes my heart just lift up, and I just love it.
Lula says she specifically wants to introduce her type of art to young African Americans.
Part of why I do it is because even in today, people of color really don't see themselves a lot on images. Younger generations of kids are growing up feeling like, oh, I can't do ballet, or still, I can't do ballet because why? I don't see a lot of African American ballerinas.
But 18-year-old Stacy Strickland says the dance studio is trying to change this way of thinking.
We give African Americans more of the opportunity to break different stereotypes and stuff in society. So you can actually see an African American person doing ballet or doing something else like flamenco or salsa.
Still, a wide variety of minority cultures come to the theater. The dancers range from toddlers to adults. Lula says the success stories are endless.
I tell you tons of stories of people that have come in, and some toured with Madonna, toured with Michael Jackson, toured all over the world. MC Hammer, back in the day, people have toured with him. But like I say, people now have been with Lion King forever.
Even though some have left the theater to dance professionally, students say dancers come back because of the family-oriented environment.
Once you're here, there really is no leaving. This is your second home.
Lula and Tamika, they're hard on you like a mother, and they could treat you like you're their own daughter and son.
The dance studio will celebrate its 30th anniversary next year. Lula says she's happy students continue to thrive in a forgotten neighborhood.
The fact that they did it here in their community and they were good enough to go out and then go all over the world with what they learned right here is a good thing, and they value it.
For now, a new group of youngsters learn the art of movement. Neela Jamie, Annenberg Radio News.
The Metropolitan Transportation Authority says a light rail system is the right kind of public transportation for South Los Angeles. Jessica Dina Flores reports that the MTA's recommendation has some critics.
The new transportation system that will serve Crenshaw Corridor area should be a light rail line, not a rapid bus line. That's the consensus in a new report released by the MTA this week. MTA estimates the line will cost $1.7 billion. The LA Urban League applauded the move. Trevor Ware, the league's chief operating officer, says the rail system is a faster way to connect South LA residents than a bus system.
We will be on par with other communities in Los Angeles where our folks can quickly and safely get where they need to go with their families.
The league is also thrilled about the nearly 8,000 jobs the project is expected to create.
And building bus or other kinds of transportation options does not bring the economic impact that light rail will bring into our community.
But the rail proposal doesn't come without serious objections. James Moore, director of USC's Transportation Engineering Program, says the MTA will be wasting tax dollars on the project.
We are producing some jobs with the projects, but it's by no means clear that the number of jobs provided by the projects is greater than the number of jobs lost by taxing away these resources.
Moore is in favor of a bus system because he says it's cheaper and a faster way to move residents. If MTA decides to go with the light rail, the project could start as early as 2012. Jessica Flores, Annenberg Radio News.
The 30 lowest performing schools in the Los Angeles school system may be open to reform from the outside. That could include charter companies coming in or partnerships between the district and private companies. A rally today outside the United Teachers of Los Angeles headquarters showed how heated the debate over the schools are becoming. Dominic Riley has the report.
Sign a petition for school reform, you will be deported. That statement was written on a flyer that school reform opponents circulated among Latino families. LAUSD officials say tactics like these are being used to deter parents from getting involved in reform.
We will not stand for fear tactics. We will not stand with any negativity that will stop reform in Los Angeles.
LAUSD School Board President Monica Garcia called for parents and members of the community to not be afraid to offer their input in reform efforts.
Stand with us today and make our schools and LA a safe, nurturing place for all parents.
The voices at the rally accused UTLA of taking part in scare tactics, but didn't provide any proof. Members of UTLA said the accusations were insulting.
For this school board to stand in front of our building and insinuate that we do not care about our students and stand up for them is insulting. UTLA embraces reform.
UTLA provided space and assistance for teachers, parents, and staff to work side by side in drafting separate reform plans for each school. Letters of intent must be turned into the district next week before LAUSD can move forward. Dominic Riley, Annenberg Radio News.
A campaign is underway that's calling for California to hold a constitutional convention, something the state hasn't done since 1878. I talked with Sherry Bebich Jeffy, a senior scholar and political analyst at USC, to see what she thought about the recent push for a statewide constitutional convention.
Every decade or so, there is this push to do something to reform government. And the last push was done by a constitutional revision commission, which really didn't have the courage to tackle the big problems and whose reforms were rejected by the electorate. Now, there's a move on to just simply basically destroy the institution and rebuild it again.
Well, what do you think about, like, you know, kind of the timing of it? Like, why would they, why is there like a sudden push for it, especially with what the state's dealing with right now?
I think part of the problem has been that there really is a feeling of disappointment and frustration and some anger. That's what the polls are showing us, both in California and nationwide, particularly in California, because government seems to be so dysfunctional. What among the things that really pushed people to focus on a constitutional convention was the fact that we've had such an incredibly large budget deficit, the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he was elected in the recall replacement election, promised to break the boxes, to make government more responsive, to solve our financial problems, and none of that happened.
What are some of the issues that you see with this particular convention?
I have just three words: town hall meetings. And that's what I see as a major problem with the constitutional convention. I don't see how you can keep such control over the convention, whoever you are, that there are not issues such as gay marriage, such as abortion rights, such as taxation, such as Proposition 13, that are brought up. And I think if the really charged social issues find a way into the debate in the Constitutional Convention, it could get ugly.
What's the likelihood of California actually holding a constitutional convention?
That's a very good question. And in ordinary times, the answer would be slim to none. But who knows? People are still very skeptical of government reform and government reform by a constitutional convention. The polls are telling us that, but it's, you know, it's a long way until the initiatives qualify and we vote on them, and then whether or not a constitutional convention is real depends on the mood of the electorate, depends on the economy, depends on the arguments that are made by proponents and opponents, depends on the message each gives, depends on the money available for a campaign, and depends on the campaign itself.
That was Sherry Bebich Jeffy, senior scholar and political analyst at USC. Now we check in with Megan McCarty to find out what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. How's it going, Megan?
Good, thanks, Pete. Tonight on Annenberg TV News, we'll have full coverage of the Fort Hood Memorial Service and President Obama's appearance there. Also, Lakers legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar announced he has leukemia. We spoke with leukemia doctors and fundraisers about what this could mean for awareness about the disease. Also, we've got an incredible video in a Boston subway. Shows a woman falling onto the tracks in front of a speeding subway train in Boston. The driver stopped inches short of her. All that and more on tonight's edition of Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. You can also watch us online anytime at atvn.org.
Thanks, Megan. We'll leave you with a bit of sad news. USC alum Tom Sparks passed away last Thursday evening at the age of 33. Sparks was one of the first students to host Annenberg Radio News and will be missed by all of us here at the university. I was fortunate enough to work with Tom on another campus television show, and all I can say is he was a natural talent with a bright future in the industry. But most importantly, he was a good guy whose optimism rubbed off on anyone who had the pleasure of meeting him. And in honor of my friend Tom, I'm going to let him close out today's show for us. This is his closing from ARN's first broadcast. Have a good one.
That's our show for Thursday, September 27th. For all of us at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Tom Sparks.